Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 96th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nestlone, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. I just want to welcome everyone back to the podcast. This week's podcast is sponsored by Miami Device. This is the premier EdTech conference in the nation, featuring many of the guests that we've had on our show. You can find out more about this can't-miss opportunity by visiting miamidevice.org. You can sign up today for their conference in November. It's going to be awesome.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing the conversations and hearing about the great things that stick out to you. We are really excited about this week's guest. We have with us today Matt Johnson, who is a third grade teacher in South Carolina. He's been selected as Campus Teacher of the Year, District Teacher of the Year, and was also a PAEMST Award nominee. So thanks, Matt, for coming on with us today.
Hey, glad to be here. Glad to join you.
Well, Matt, we always like to start with just hearing a little bit about you. So how did you end up in education?
Well, it is an interesting story. I mean, starting as a young age, I really didn't have any idea of what I wanted to do. A typical young kid, I wanted to be a police officer, fireman, something. I even wanted to be a dentist for some reason. But as I look back at those occupations, all those they have in common with teachers is that they're in the service industry. And I always found great joy in helping people and serving people and plugging in wherever I was needed and using my whatever skills and abilities I had to help in whatever manner was needed. And it came, I think, being overseas one summer, or actually one semester, I was over in Africa, and I was reading some stories with some children, and I just thought, this is so cool, reading with kids and helping them learn to read. And, I was an undecided major in college, and then I think that was the beginning process of leading me into education. I ended up graduating an undergrad with an English degree, which really does not describe me at all because I'm not really into English literature at all. I love the writing aspect of it and a lot of the electives that went along with the major. But I ended up going back to get my master's and started in secondary education, which was high school English. And for 2 years I did a long-term substitute position. For 2 years I did maternity leaves for high school English, all in one high school. And I quickly learned that was not what I wanted to do with my teaching career. So I ended up at the right, it was just the right time. The timing was perfect. I was able to switch from when I was working on my master's to secondary English to elementary education. And that was when I quickly found out that's where I needed to be. And so that was 10 years ago. I've been teaching for 10 years, and I've taught, this is my fifth year teaching third grade, and I've taught fourth, fifth, and sixth as well. So this is it's been an interesting journey. Never knew, 20, 25 years ago would I ever end up being a teacher, but here I am today.
What would you say if you kind of looked at being a teacher as a whole, what would you say like kind of your favorite part of the profession is?
Well, this might not be the answer that administration and my school district personnel want to hear, but one of the things that has brought me great joy is some of the things I started doing in my first year is playing football at recess with my kids. I mean, I grew up being a sports fan, loved playing sports, went out there one day at recess. This was in sixth grade, when I was teaching sixth grade, and the recess was on a tennis court, which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But as I was watching them out there, they were just walking around, not really doing much at all. And then, so I decided one day to bring my football to school, and I said, all right, let's start throwing the football around. We ended up playing a little two-hand touch flag football, and later on I started realizing not many kids know what two-hand touch means. It's more like two-hand shove, fall to the ground and have to go to the nurse. And so I ended up, that process ended up getting, I wrote some grants for some flag football equipment, and 10 years later I almost have almost a little flag football league in my own school, it seems like. And it's amazing how many contacts from parents and students, how much they say it, big of a difference it makes that I'm playing sports with their kid at school. Mm-hmm. And how much they really appreciate it. And that's the ones that actually have said something to me or actually I had contact with. But I know that kids throughout the day, they say, you know what, I can't wait to play at recess. I know that's not educational, but it's something that I've been able to mentor kids that I don't teach that are in my classroom. I'm able to bring alongside and just begin a a positive connection or relationship with kids and talk about our attitudes and we talk about fair play. We talk about just having fun. And that's been one of the things that I've been very proud of, but it's also one of the things that I love going to school every day is being able to make those positive interactions with kids at school.
So, Matt, I know that you love teaching through kind of hands-on learning and STEM and all that. What is one of your favorite lessons that you get to do with your students?
I've done a lot with science, and really my first 4 years of teaching, I didn't teach science. I taught ELA and social studies. And I think they put me in that position because I had an English degree. So I my first year, I was happy to have any job. So I took what was given, and I kept working in those positions. But finally, in my fifth year of teaching, I finally was able to teach science. And the first year that I started teaching science, I was basically a first-year teacher again. I was teaching the way I was told to teach, because I was teaching something brand new. And I quickly learned, this is not the way science was supposed to be taught. So I took some training. I went through a week-long hands-on science teaching course, that's a statewide level course. And I quickly, as I was going through that course, I said, I can do this. My kids are going to love this. And so it's been every year I do something completely different. I love using dry ice in my science lessons. It's something that kids, when they see it and they hear it, when it touches something, it makes this noise, it makes all this fog and smoke, and the kids' wonder and excitement gets them hooked into wanting to learn, all right, why? It's the big question is, why is it doing this? What is this? How is this different from anything that I've seen before with regular ice? And so it really has opened up a lot of questions, and anything that I do in a science lesson that it introduces them to something where they continue to ask, or they continue to wonder about, the world, how it works. And there's a lot of things. Dry ice is one of those things. Anything that makes a noise, makes an explosion, it really gets them excited about whatever we're doing in class, and then it just hooks them into what we're doing. And that's what I'm, what I go for is increasing the level of student engagement in my classroom and getting something in their hands, whether it's mushy, whether it's soft, whether it's, looking at it, whether it's making sounds with it, whatever it is that they are interested in doing. That's what I'm bringing each and every day, each and every year, trying to find something new and exciting. And I kind of like to put myself in their shoes. And if I keep doing something the same over and over again, I'm going to get bored. But if I'm getting excited, I know the excitement comes out in me. And so when they start seeing that I'm excited about teaching something, they're also going to, it's going to be contagious for them. They're going to be excited about it, and they're going to really be engaged in whatever we're doing.
That's great. What kind of things do you do to continue your own learning?
It's just, I guess, recently in the past year, just getting on Twitter. I think one of the things I've got on there and getting on Twitter and just following a whole bunch of people and clicking on links that people are tweeting out and finding things. It's my own professional development. I recently, it was kind of funny, I recently just started another master's program, and I realized how much I didn't like being told what to read or being told what to do. But when I go on professional development through Twitter, I'm reading what I want to do. I'm reading what I see is appropriate or what I see that I can see that can be done in my own classroom. And I think this through that type of learning that I see that it benefits my students, because I'm always I'm keeping them in mind. How is this going to help them? How is this going to be more beneficial to what we're learning in third grade? Or I also think about what can help not just my students, but what about the other students in my school? How can I share this out? And a lot of times I'm kind of hesitant to share something because I don't want to share something and it not work. And so I want to try it out first, and so I'm always a pioneer when it comes to things in the school. And so when I say, okay, this works, this is pretty cool, this is what I did, and I'll share it out. And so a lot of things have caught on at my school because of that. And really, I mean, Twitter's been a big part of it. There's been other things that have been really, I'm just Googling it. Hey, how do I do this? And so I go on to it, and I find something. I say, all right, let me try this, and I take it in my classroom. I put it into my management system. I said, all right, let's see if this will work. And a lot of times it's failure, which I'm very accustomed to failing at stuff. But at the same time, that failure has brought a big learning experience for me, being able to find something that does work.
So thinking about finding things that do work, how do you motivate those kids who may seem unmotivatable?
Good question. Every year I have several students like that. A lot of it, I mean, at first it starts with knowing your students. And a lot of the first few weeks of school, you know, I get right into the content, but a lot of it's one-on-one. It's, you know, in small groups, finding out who these kids really are. What really excites them? If it's something, I mean, some things, you know, for me, music and the arts and dance, that's just not my style. But if it's their style, I have to find a way to connect to them. And I think that's, if I can build in those relationships with those students, finding out who they really are, what they do, what they like, what their passion is, and then finding a way to pull that into what I'm doing in the classroom, that's where they seem to catch on. Mm-hmm. And I have one student last year that I taught, he was very good in math, but reading, he just was a very good reader. And there was a lot of times when I would pull him to the side. I had to meet with him every day working on his reading. And every day I was pulling with him, I had to give him this pep talk. And this pep talk involved a lot of the things that I knew that he liked. Because a lot of times, if I didn't give him that pep talk, he would just basically sit there and do nothing. And so I had to talk about Transformers. I had to talk about Legos. And I had to talk about all these stuff that interested him. Although it had nothing to do with what we were reading, but it got him smiling, it got him interested, and it was through that relationship that I had with him that he was able to really start to work hard, really started to show me what he was capable of doing, and I did see a lot of progress out of him just by building that positive relationship with him.
So think about something over maybe the last couple of years. What's something you're really proud of accomplishing over those couple of years?
I guess it comes through what I've seen in the needs of my students. I started, before I ever knew what blended classrooms or blended learning or flipped classrooms were, I think I was doing something like that, and I was doing it based on the need of one particular student. There was a particular student that was pulled out for ESOL, and I was teaching math whole group, which was, you know, all other third grade teachers were doing. And I was teaching whole group math lessons, realizing that I had such a wide range of learners in my classroom. I had very high learners, I had very low learners, and I had a whole bunch in between. And I had that one ESOL, he was one of those low learners, and the teacher kept pulling or changing his time for a pullout, and it was during math time, and he really needed that math content. And so I had to formulate a plan on how that he is, when he's in the classroom with me, he is getting the meat of what we're doing. And so I just went completely out of whole group math lesson. I went completely into stations and centers. And actually, when the time that he was in the classroom, he was watching me, a video of me teaching a lesson. And so, and then he would, you know, watch a video of me teaching a lesson. He would go and practice it. And then after that, he practiced it, he would come to me and we would talk about anything that was confusing to him. You know, I was just basically, it was every day, it was an assessment of what they were learning. And I did that only for that one student, and I didn't realize that's kind of a blended learning, but it's a kind of a flipped classroom within the classroom concept. Mm-hmm. So I guess you could call it blended learning is what I don't know if that's been coined or not, but that's what we were doing, and I was proud of that, and I was only able to do that. I had a lot of resources that I wrote through grants. In my own school, we have each teacher has two iPads in the classroom. But through grants, I was able to, I have six iPads, six laptop computers. I have two desktop computers that I also use for videos and for other web content. And through all these resources, I was able to do the flipped classroom. I was able to do the blended learning environments. And I was very proud that I had those materials. And I said, well, I have all this stuff. What can I do with it? And so that's where I brought in, you know, my blended learning or blipped or whatever you want to call it, atmosphere in my classroom.
You need to trademark those names right now, so when you write your book, you've got the rights to it. So.
As I said, I'm a little hesitant to share because I'm not yeah, maybe I guess I should.
This is probably the wrong place to do that, then.
Yeah.
Todd, you're muted.
Oh, I keep having, dang it. I said I was going to steal the blended learning because I think it's brilliant, and I'm going to start using it everywhere I go. Nap was stupid because my mic was muted. Okay, so anyway, Matt, tell me about somebody who inspired you when you were growing up.
It has to be, well, I mean, my parents were my first teachers, and so although neither one of them are educators, they taught me the value of a hard work ethic. And my dad was, you know, my dad's a plumber. He's a retired plumber now. And I worked with him ever since I was started at the age of 7. I was his plumber's assistant from 7 till 21. And I saw him get up very, very early. I saw him work in the extreme cold, the extreme heat. And when days when he would be working and digging trenches to lay pipe, I would think, can't we just go home? I mean, I'm just ready to go home. Or if something wasn't working right, I just wanted to say, Dad, can we just come back tomorrow and finish it? But he kept working at it. He kept trying. When he saw a problem, he didn't see a time to quit. He saw a challenge to get it right. And so that was one of the things that I feel like I've taken into my classroom, in my school. If I see a problem, I'm not just going to quit. If I see a student that is an opportunity to quit, I consider it a challenge. And every year I have what I call a nugget. I have a student that just is my one person that I just know is going to be such a challenge, but I see something, I have to find something. And sometimes I have to look for it. Just like you would for gold, you have to really look for what is it that's in that student that I can pull out. Can I be the one that can find the potential, or if I can find the ability of that student when nobody else could find it? And so I think my dad was that way. My mom was very patient. A lot of people describe me as being patient, and that is definitely needed in the education world, is when things don't go right, when things don't go your way, is that you are just waiting for things. You know, sometimes you got to wait a little bit. Sometimes you just have to keep moving, even though it doesn't seem like things are working. You just got to keep trusting the process. And again, with technology, it's been that way too. A lot of times technology is not working. You know, technology is just not, doesn't seem to be where it needs to be in our school with the Wi-Fi, with everything working. You know, my mom just showed a patience that I feel like I got from her. Again, going back to my dad was always prepared. I learned very, very early in my teaching career the importance of having a plan B and even a plan C when things don't work quite right. My first year teaching, that's when we had overhead projectors. I was being observed for my first year teacher evaluation, and the overhead projector bulb went out right in the middle of my observation. This was my second or third observation, and I had my plan B of what was going to happen, or either I thought quickly on my feet. And that came from my dad. My dad was always about being prepared. He loved preparing for vacations. He had everything, every possible disaster possibility. He had a solution to it. Everything was ready. And I have to attribute my parents, although neither one were educators. It was those, I guess you call them soft skills that they had that they were able to be passed on to me.
What's something that you maybe read over the last year or so that maybe of interest to our teachers? Have you read any educational books or blogs that you specifically read?
Well, I am doing a lot of reading right now for my master's that I started. I just started my master's in educational leadership. Not that I want to leave the classroom, but I always want to have it as an option. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of reading just with classroom, how classrooms are set up, how schools are set up. I love having... you know, I love working with schedules. I love working with, you know, timesheets and looking at how things work and how things maneuver and are throughout a whole school process. And I'm not good with names. I'm not good with names of articles or names of even individuals. But there was one article that I was reading just on it was on a. I guess it was a form of behavior management, and he just talked about how if you must consequate, you must educate. And it just goes along with behavior management and how if you're going to, you know, issue some type of consequence for a misbehavior or some way, taking that student aside, don't just, you know, issue out some kind of consequence or some type of punishment, but look at it for an opportunity to teach. And so I think that's what's missing a lot in our education world. We're so quick to just, and I do it too. I see something happening with a student, and I quickly want to just, you know, issue some type of consequence for them not listening or not behaving like we've practiced over and over again, or we haven't, or they're not doing something that we've that I keep over and over teaching again. But at the same time, that opportunity, that's still another opportunity to teach. And I think that there's so many times we're just it's just easy to quickly give a student some type of a consequence, and we don't take the time to pull them aside and say, hey, here's what you did. Let's think about some ways, and that's a part of that building that positive relationship, because kids are so many times they always say, I'd never do anything right. You're always getting on to me. There's no, and I think we have, and that's the teacher's responsibility, that we have to continually, they say it's, 5 positives for every negative. It probably should be even more than that, because a negative goes a long way with a student and the relationship between a student and a teacher. And so there's so many ways that, we need to continue to build that positive relationship every day, thinking about those particular students who are very sensitive to those negative responses that teachers get. And so I can't even think of the name of the professor that was speaking on this. But that's basically that's one saying that stuck with me, with even what I'm using within my master's and continues even with my classroom today.
So, Matt, when you're having a really rough day, what do you kind of do to recenter yourself?
Well, coffee's pretty good. I have a coffee pot in my room. I don't know if that's allowed or not, but I have one. I do like to run. I do love someday I'll take running clothes to school with me, and I'll run right after school. It's not something I started running for stress relief. It's just something I've just done to stay in shape, but it's amazing how some days I'll have just a stressful day, and I'll lace up my shoes, and I'll take 3 steps into my run, and it's just like release of everything that's happened that day is just gone. I mean, some days it takes about 4 or 5 miles for it to wear off, but running is one of the things. It's amazing how I've even incorporated my own physical activity outside of school into my own classroom, and there's a lot of things that we do. As I said earlier with our stations and our transitioning, last year when I was doing the math stations, we have a certain time, there's a repeating clock. When it gets down to 100, that's their time to switch, their time to rotate their station. And if a lot of them, their cleanup is just a matter of, hitting the power button on a device and sitting off the side. So they got a minute just standing there doing nothing while others are cleaning up other materials. And so I said, well, let's just do some exercises in between. For that 1 minute, let's do some push-ups, some squats, squat jumps, gorilla jumps, burpees, anything that is in between to get them moving. And, if they're cleaning up, I'm in the middle of doing these exercises. So it's been a stress relief not just for me, but it's been for my students too. And believe it or not, the hardest exercise that I ever do, which is a burpee, they love doing. That's their favorite exercise. And so we do Burpee Fridays. And I think that physical activity that I do, not really for stress relief, or I didn't start for stress relief, has become something that I look forward to when I've had a hard day. And some days, if I've had a hard day, I just need to put everything down. I need to go take care of me. When sometimes I got all this stack of stuff to do, it's going to be worthless if I don't just stop and take care of me for a little bit. So I go home and I just, go on a little run and I feel a little better. And probably at the same time, I have a little cup of coffee before I run or after I run too.
What about if you could go back and talk to yourself as a first-year teacher, knowing what you know now? What kind of advice would you give yourself?
To chill out, dude, is what I would say. I mean, and I always, even when I was doing my student teaching, there was a teacher, not the one I was working with, but there was another teacher across the hall. She had this chill attitude. And I looked at her and I just thought, I want to be like her. I didn't see her every day like I saw my cooperating teacher, but I said, I just want to be like her. And I knew that I couldn't be like her my first year, because, your first year teaching, you get told all these sayings, don't smile till Christmas, and all these things like that. And I knew that probably wasn't right, but I knew I had to set a precedence with my students. This is how my class is going to be. This is how I'm going to be. This is how you're going to be. And at the same time, I realized I wasn't doing any smiling. I wasn't building positive relationships. And I think yeah, I need to chill out, but I need to look at students as individuals. And I looked at them before as a whole group, and as a whole group, they're not all the same. They are their own person. They're their own interests. They have their fears. They have their dreams. They have their own family history. They have their own, you know, their own stuff that they're bringing to school that school doesn't really matter to them at that time. And I realize I do need to chill out on some things, but at the same time, I need to focus on each student individually. And I think that building those positive relationships, before I can teach anything, I have to focus on the students and who they are before anything is going to be effective. I have to really focus on them.
So, Matt, one of the questions that we always like to end on whenever we interview our guests is, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
Well, I love using, like what I've said, my blended learning of whatever I'm doing. I really like doing it. I'm trying to add stuff to it all the time. And I've just recently through a certain webinar that I watched about flipped classroom, becoming flipped classroom certified. This particular presenter talked about incorporating project-based learning into flipped classrooms. You might be familiar with flipped classrooms and project-based learning. I'm referring to Todd's webinar that I watched. and I'm really getting into project-based learning. I've done a lot of research on it, but I haven't implemented it in my classroom at all. And I decided this year was the year I was going to do it. And really, this time of year, May is a good month because statewide testing is done and students are crazy and the teachers are even crazier. And I said, well, let me just do something brand new. And so just probably the past couple of weeks, I've put into project-based learning. I'm doing a lot more reading about it. And the kids are really excited about it. I see that they're excited about it because there's a lot less misbehaviors during this time, because that means they're more engaged in what we're doing. And so I'm just, you know, getting used to, first of all, figuring out what it is, I'm starting out really basic. I mean, it's just a basic project that they're doing, but I really would like to continue looking at project-based learning. I really want to get into game-based learning and seeing what that's all about. Again, I've done several reading or several articles about it, but I'm a little hesitant to jump into it yet. But knowing me, I'll probably jump right into it. And so that's a lot of things. I like doing anything new because I'm a little ADD when it comes to doing the same thing over and over again. I got to be doing something new, and I want to find out what works and what doesn't work. And I'm getting to where I'm starting to be okay with it if it doesn't work, if it's a complete flop. And that's what's been hesitant for me for so long, is I've worried about it flopping or just being a complete utter mess. But now I'm getting used to it, and it's not so bad after all. But and so I guess it's just trying anything new. I'm just looking at there's a lot of new things out there, and there's a lot of things that it's not good for everybody. There's a lot of things out there that to choose from, and so I want to try it all before I say no to anything. And so I'm not really sure if I even answered that question. If I'm really,
yeah, that's great. That's fantastic.
I guess I'm just looking at anything, just looking at everything, seeing what's out there.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Matt, thanks so much for spending some time with us this evening. How can listeners connect with you?
Well, I am on Twitter at MattJohnson10, and also on Instagram, MattJohn, MattJohn10. Facebook, I think it's MattJ10. My students actually have a Twitter account. It's DogTech, DawgTech. They also have an Instagram account, Blaze, BLAZE _ Biscuit. Blaze is our bearded dragon, and Biscuit's my dog, so it's Blaze _Biscuit, and that's at on Instagram.
Awesome. And you can connect with us at EduAllStarsHQ, or just search out anything on Google for EduAllStars. You'll find us. We're all over the front page there.
Yep.
And join us for our next episode with instructional technology specialist Shayna Glass. And don't forget to check out Miami Device by visiting miamidevice.org. Thanks again, Matt, and we'll catch you later.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.